Hey, good morning. Happy Saturday morning to you, wherever you are out there in this great land or beyond.
October. We're in October.
We are. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall along with Beth Guckenberger. We hope you're doing great wherever you are. It's October.
I think that they're probably on their way to a pumpkin patch right now or a soccer tournament. Where else would people go on a fall Saturday morning?
I don't know, but they should be eating some type of apple fritter.
I think so, too, with the apple cider in their hands.
Yes, absolutely.
And an apple candle burning nearby.
Now, that's a bit much.
And then...
In a lot of news this week. A lot of banterable topics, by the way.
Lots of things happening in the
that's
U.S.
right. I mean, between the end of Breaking Bad...
The government shutdown.
The government shutdown. I mean...
There have been plane crashes... I mean, all
well, that's not very uplifting, but I mean,
there's the government shutting down.
That's not very exciting
there's not
either.
Really anything definable about Breaking Bad that anybody would call, uplifting?
It was the greatest show ever. What are you talking about? The greatest show on television
How
in television
seasons
history.
Was it on?
Five.
Five seasons, and was I never saw even one. That's my listener disclaimer. But
yes.
If I saw one, is the inside of one show? Is there like redeemable moments, like characters that show honor or valor? Or like,
well, the interesting thing is, in like most things now, most characters are tragic heroes. So movies, whatever. So there isn't any always good or always bad character anymore. And so within these people who are doing bad things, they do have honorable moments. But I wouldn't call anything in the show overly honorable.
Do you find like? Sometimes when I watch shows about bad guys, I get like a little tender spot for them when you see them like they kill someone during
yes.
the day and they come home and tuck their kids in at night, or they
a little conflicted.
Like they, set the fire
yep.
arson and then they kiss their girl before they leave
yep.
the house. Like, were the bad guys they have relationships of value?
Well, sure. I mean, it's kind of hard for me to recount 5 years of the show. Here, but
I'm trying to see if there's any reason I would
yes.
ever any love
it's
story.
It's a relatively dark show.
Okay, no.
Was a relatively dark show, but that what made it so great was the depth of all of these.
Why do people
characters.
Like dark shows? Okay, I liked the show that was on for 8 episodes and they canceled it mid-season. That's how apparently bad it was. It was called The Philanthropist. Did you ever see that show?
I had heard of it. I did not see it. That's why it got canceled. Most people didn't see it.
I have lent out my little 8-episode DVD pack to many people. I will you. But it's a show about this guy, kind of, think Bill Gatesy, but a little bit more playboyish, single and all hip, although he has quite the
And obviously
story.
He wants to give away money
so
or
then he
something.
He travels to all these exotic locations, finding himself and cures malaria in one village. And then
of course
village,
he does.
Saves the day from the tsunami and he goes around these and I loved that show and I don't understand why people don't want to watch those shows.
Here's
uplifting. Instead, your dark show made it 5 whole seasons.
Yeah. Well, I don't know anything about that show. It could have been horrible.
22 times
bad acting and writing.
22
I don't know.
2 hours times 5. I mean, you watched over 100 hours of this.
Oh yeah, and then I had plenty of banter back and forth with friends and people about it. Yeah, I mean, the whole, subculture or whatever. Here's the thing.
Yes.
Right? So, most television shows, they figure everything out that there's to figure out in less than 60 minutes.
Okay.
So, I like a kind of show that it just continues. It doesn't just, we can figure out that dilemma in 60 minutes and move on to the next. We can save the world in this show, and then something else will happen next time, and we'll save the world again. I would much rather have a show that...
Really?
That goes on, absolutely.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's because you don't like closure.
I just like a deep story. I like, characters and things like that. Anyway. Something else happened this week that's probably more fun than talking about television, and that was the Junior Genius, the Google Junior Genius thing.
The 2013 fair, yes.
Yes.
Those kids are to put on your future resume, I won the Google 2013
yeah.
Junior Genius Award.
Right.
I'm the grand champion.
Forget the resume. They just go ahead, just skip to a job. How old are these people? They're 12.
13 and 14.
Yeah.
I think the oldest was 17.
Yeah.
And he invented a way to cure the flu or something crazy.
Cure the flu? They're talking about an early detection melanoma for cancer.
Yeah.
Right? They're talking about exoskeletons on people's hands and things.
One of the youngest winner, he created a kind of bioplastic out of banana peels. So, you know, we're so green. Like, where, what?
Hey, what are you working on there up in your room? Are you doing some homework? Hey, leave me alone. I'm working on building some plastics out of banana peels.
I'm going to save the planet. I was on my skateboard the other day, and...
Could you leave me alone? I'm trying to figure out how to detect cancer earlier.
No. Well, okay, kudos to Google for fostering this kind. Absolutely. We like that about them.
Absolutely.
Please go and Google yourself something today.
So you can go on Google, and you can Google the 2013 Google Science Fair.
I mean...
And you would find out anything that you
Do you remember your first science fair?
Google freaks me out a little bit, by the way.
It does.
Yeah, I mean, they know, I mean... They know way too much. I mean, they're just one step closer to my life than the NSA. I mean, they're just barely closer.
Googled last week's, like, whatever.
No. You've been living in Mexico too long. They know everything there is to know.
But what is there to know about me that, I mean, who cares, right?
Okay.
I looked up the weather last night.
Obviously not very interested.
I'm interested.
When you're running for office, when you're running for governor, they'll rerun this show, and they'll say, hey, that Beth Guggenberger, she's running for governor or whatever. She doesn't care about, like, privacy. She doesn't care about individual privacy rights or anything like that. Well, who cares? Just
it's
know anything that
good.
You want to know. It's fine. So today, the first Saturday in October, your political career is ended. They're going to dig up this tape, and that's going
to
be...
I'll find a way to spin it so that now all of the privacy
good luck with
rights
that.
People will...
Good luck with that. I get what you're saying. You're like, oh, who cares if they see my stuff? I don't do anything. Right?
I mean, I'm just thinking, I don't have anything to hide is what I was really thinking.
Well,
but
it's the principle of the matter.
Okay, well,
I'm
all about that for you. Yes. Do you remember your first science fair project?
No. Have no idea.
Really?
None.
Okay, mine was about yeast. I remember all about it. Yeast and how it
yeast.
Works. Yep, and I had like one of those like, I mean, can you imagine what the science fair projects look like now with, like, the little iPads and, like, the smart boards and, like, the, like, projectors and, like, you know, I had, like, a cardboard thing. And
Dude's making plastic out of banana peels.
And I was describing someone else's work. I mean, right. That tells you something, right? I was talking about what someone else had discovered, and now they're discovering it for themselves.
Are you going to tell us what you learned about yeast, or you just remember that that was the topic of your...
I remember everything about it. I remember that I made bread, and I showed bread without yeast and bread with yeast and talked about the chemical reaction, and I think about it when I make things with yeast now. I think, oh, yeast and how it works, fourth grade. Mrs. Beschler.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm just telling you.
All right. Well, I'm sure if she's listening, she's very proud.
She's thinking.
Right now.
Every science teacher out there, you make your kids do projects. They complain, but you never forget them.
Yes. Well, obviously, some of us forget them.
No, that's right.
Not you didn't forget them. I have almost no memory of school anyway.
Really, Mr.
Yeah.
PhD?
Yeah, well, that came later. When I was in middle school and high school or whatever,
who you sat with?
No,
like,
my gosh. I remember games. I remember the games I played in. I could tell you, you know, how many points I scored at Medina.
Yeah.
You know, and when I was a junior.
But forget,
I can picture my first basket as a varsity basketball player my sophomore year. I can remember those crystal clear. I can't remember a single thing.
Science teacher's name.
I can remember one language arts teacher, I think. Mr. Knapp was his name, because we studied Edgar Allan Poe, and I liked it. See, back to dark. See, it's a theme running through my life.
Foreshadowing of Breaking Bad.
That's exactly right. I like Edgar Allan Poe. So,
yeah.
Hey,
great show. Today.
Two totally different guests today. I mean, could we be at the opposite ends of the spectrum? So, R.T. Kendall, Dr. R.T. Kendall, is going to join us right after the break, and he's going to talk about his new book, Finding Your Heart's Desire. It's about ambition, motivation, true success. He's written like 50 books.
I'm looking forward to talking about ambition because
seasoned
I think in the Christian
author.
Yes, in the Christian world, sometimes ambition is misunderstood, and I don't think that it's a bad thing. I think it's a good thing.
And then after that, we're gonna have like an up and coming new band. I mean, how different could we be?
I do love music.
Carrollton Band is gonna join us. They're up and coming. Just signed their first
record deal. Do they call it that anymore? Record deal?
I don't know.
Their first iTunes contract.
Something. I don't know what it is.
Their first playlist.
But those folks will be joining us right after this break. We hope you'll be joining us too. This is Real Life, Real Talk. We'll see you in 60 seconds.
This past summer, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to India, where I met a little girl named Shailaja from an orphanage with back-to-back. She was a new child at the home and was having a hard time adjusting. As I began playing with her and painting her nails, I was reminded that this little girl was just like my sisters back at home in the United States. Instead of a face on a photo, she became a part of my family when I realized that I could continue to help her through back-to-back's child sponsorship program. Even though she lives over 8,000 miles away, through the back-to-back sponsorship program, I can ensure that her spiritual, physical, educational, emotional, and social needs are met. The best part about the program is when I come home from school and find a letter from Shailaja. I am so thankful for God working within both of our hearts in order to lead us closer to each other and closer to Him. Visit www.backtoback.org for more information.
Welcome back. This is Real Life Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall along with Beth Kuchenberger. We hope you're having a fabulous Saturday morning.
Fabulous fall.
Wherever you happen to be on this Saturday.
Do you think the chill is in the air all across the country, or do you think only certain parts of the country?
You know, down in Dallas where producer Ken is, I'm guessing it's not. There's not a chill in the air yet.
The sun is still shining.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a chill in the air ever there.
Hey, wherever you are, enjoy the crisp feeling of fall.
You know, every once in a while we get guests on our show and you read their bio, you read some of their books, you read, and you're like, how in the world do we get people like this on the show? Dr. R.T. Kendall is going to join us. He's a graduate of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, Oxford University. He's a protege of Dr. Martin Lloyd-Jones, senior minister of this historic Westminster Chapel in London for 25 years. He's written over 50 books. Now, I know you're an author, and, you know, you've written
50 books is quite a pace.
50 is amazing.
I'm thinking he's the right guy to talk to us about ambition.
Absolutely. So we are going to be talking about his new book, Finding Your Heart's Desire, Ambition, Motivation, and True Success. So, Dr. Kendall, welcome to the show. We are so glad that you're here. Dr. Kendall, are you with us?
I'm looking forward to some technical difficulty
there with his connection.
I'm looking forward to talking about this subject because I think sometimes ambition is confused. I think there is a sense of godly ambition. Don't you think there's a
sense absolutely.
But don't you think that oftentimes ambition is confused for you're trying to make a name for yourself or build your own kingdom or striving too hard? You should be abiding, not striving. And I do think there's a place inside of the Christian church where we should be talking about what it means to go after that which God put on your heart with relentless pursuit. And that relentless pursuit can be another way to call ambition.
Yeah, so, I mean, and it's certainly a question that he could answer for us. I mean, this idea of godly ambition. You're right, I think when people think ambition, they think necessarily something selfish.
Yeah, it's like self-seeking.
That's right, and it doesn't have to be. And so, again, having him on with us to talk about sort of the differences between that is a good thing. And I think we've fixed our technical difficulties. So, Dr. Kendall, are you with us?
Yes.
Oh, excellent. We are so glad to have you with us. We've been talking about your book, Finding Your Heart's Desire, Ambition, Motivation, and True Success. And we were talking about the fact right out of the gate that you've written more than 50 books. And so why this one? What was the motivation? What was the purpose in writing this book?
Well, good question. The answer is that 20 years ago at Westminster Chapel, one of my deacons said to me, I wish one day you would write a book on ambition. He was a successful businessman, and I think he was maybe feeling a bit guilty that he had ambition. And then 3 or 4 years ago, another deacon at my old church, Westminster Chapel, I was talking to him on the phone. He said, have you ever thought about writing a book on ambition? I said, well, you know, in the mouth of two witnesses, every word should be established. Maybe I should. And then over the months after that conversation, things began to gel, and I just started writing. And I would have simply called the book Ambition, But publishers, they get ideas, what they think will sell best. So they turned it into Finding Your Heart's Desire.
Yes.
Yes, they sure do. Give me some biblical examples of both healthy ambition and unhealthy ambition.
Well, let me say that I was motivated partly by a quote of Martin Luther. Martin Luther used to say, God uses sex to drive a man to marriage, ambition to drive a man to service, fear to drive a man to faith. And it made me see that God does use ambition to get our attention and make us want to do things. And so my book is full of examples, Old Testament, New Testament, of people who, in their ambition, it was God's way of getting his own work done.
Is it possible, Beth and I were talking as we were getting ready to have you on the air, as we were in between segments, is it possible for somebody to be overly ambitious, to have too much ambition?
Sure. Chapter 10 of my book, Finding Your Heart's Desire, is called Too Much Ambition? Absolutely.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yes. But the thesis of my book is your ambition should be developed to the extent that what you want is the honor and glory of God. And a truly spiritual person will not lose his ambition, but he'll be ambitious to get the honor that comes from God only, so that this ambition can be channeled in one direction, namely to please the Lord.
One thing that Rob and I have talked a lot about is the different generational, like the millennials and the Gen Xers and the boomers. And do you think that ambition can be taught? Because that's a frequent complaint of this up-and-coming generation, that they don't have a sense of ambition, that their relationships are more important than success. And so can we instill ambition, healthy ambition, in the
yes.
next generation?
Well, that's a very good question. The answer is yes. But I think it probably is taught at an early age. I had a father who somehow, for good or ill, just drove me to achieve. Sometimes I think he drove me too hard, and sometimes I think I have too much ambition. But what I've tried to do in this book is to set a person free, that no one would feel guilty for their ambitious nature or having strong motivation, as long as you channel that in one direction to the honor and glory of God, and then it becomes something God really uses.
I think in your book you talk, if I remember correctly, you talk about the sort of being an inheritance, that if you're motivated by a godly ambition, that's sort of an inheritance from God. Am I getting that right?
That is not quite the way I would put it.
Yeah.
I say that every Christian is called to enter into his or her inheritance. Some do, some don't. And so the way to know that your ambition is godly is that you find out what it is God wants you to do and come to terms with the way he's made you, your own gifting, and if you pursue him through faith, you will come into your inheritance and want you to have a good, strong ambition to please God, and by doing so, you come into your inheritance here below. And the result of that is that you find your niche in life, you find how God wants to use you, the kind of relationship you can have with him, and then at the judgment seat of Christ, a reward when God says, well done.
One of the chapters I found interesting was chapter 11, the relationship between ambition and finance, or ambition and money. And tell me, when you are writing this, I mean, we can say ambition, but really we're thinking about really ambitious people become successful, and success is often measured by how thick our bank account is. So what were you hoping the reader would learn from your teaching on ambition and money?
Well, the first is, not everybody can be trusted with making money. Everybody may want to, and I think one of the most unhappy developments ever to come along is the way certain aspects of Christian teaching have focused on money and how God wants you to be rich. He wants you to be successful. Here are three easy lessons. I don't think everybody's called to make a lot of money. I'm not, and I think only a few people can be trusted with wealth. And I think one of these developments is so sad, especially in certain TV ministries, where they appeal to a person's greed and say, look, you can be successful. God wants you to have good holidays and five-star hotels and wants you to be well off and you're called to be this. That's not right. I think we need to come to terms with the fact not all are called in that direction.
We're talking with Dr. R.T. Kendall about his new book, Finding Your Heart's Desire, Ambition, Motivation, and True Success. And it's interesting, if financial reward often makes people feel uncomfortable, I often hear that just any reward that I would be expecting or motivated by any reward from God as being somewhat selfish. What do you say about that?
Yeah, I'm very, very pleased that you brought that up. You see, it is God himself who motivates us with the idea of reward. I think it's a false kind of humility, false piety, to say, we are not to be motivated by reward. Really? God has always done this. And so you asked 5 minutes ago, what are biblical examples? Abraham, he's the one. God says to him, do what I tell you, and I'll make your name great. Mm. Tell me that isn't appeal to his own desire to be great. And what you have in the Sermon on the Mount and the teachings of Jesus. Take, for example, judge not lest you be judged. Who wants to be judged? Jesus said, well, a way to avoid being judged is that you don't judge, and you will be rewarded by not being judged. Or to put it another way, if you are persecuted for righteousness, for Christ's sake, great will your reward be in heaven. So we are motivated by reward. And when it comes to financial success, let's face it, Paul did say, he that sows sparingly will reap sparingly. So there's truth to this, even tithing. And I have a book on tithing. Mm. I think every Christian should tithe. Malachi says, give the whole tithe to the storehouse, and you will have such a reward you won't be able to contain it. So away with this idea that God doesn't appeal to our self-interest. He certainly does.
Hey, before we run out of time, I know there's a very personal story about what you learned about ambition as you tried numerous ways to meet Nelson Mandela when you were in South Africa. And can you recount that story for us?
It's very painful. Well, the answer is I didn't succeed. I did not succeed. As we speak, he's still alive. But a couple years ago, it came to me that this was a desire I had that, although I could probably justify it, most people would say, well, why not? I could see that it was selfish. Could I meet Nelson Mandela and keep quiet about it? What would be my motive? I couldn't have an hour with him without telling people. And I began to see that this is something God wasn't in. It was very humbling for me. And the truth is, I had a selfish motive. You could justify it in a sense, but I've written a book called Total Forgiveness. And it's my best seller. And God has used it probably more than any book I've written, at least up to now. And I thought it would be great to have Nelson Mandela, who is an example of one who's forgiven his enemy, to give a quotation for my book. God said, no, R.T., leave it alone. But I had that ambition, and I had to come to terms with although I could justify that, I think I could a little bit, it wasn't right for me to pursue, so I dropped it.
Well, Dr. Kendall, we are so glad that you made some time for our show today, and nothing but the best in terms of this book, Finding Your Heart's Desire, and all of your other work as well. Thanks so much for being with us.
You're very kind. Thank you for having me. God bless you.
Absolutely. God bless you. You know, when you hear somebody who's been in ministry for years and years and years, written so many books, there's just an inherent wisdom almost.
That's what I just tweeted. I love talking to people who've lived long and well.
Yes. Well, guess what? We're going to go the other end. After the break, we're going to be talking to Justin Mosteller.
You never know what you're going to get here.
That's exactly right. From the new band, Carrollton Band, they've just signed a new record deal, and we're going to talk to him a little bit about making music.
Sounds exciting.
So join us right after the break. This is Real Life, Real Talk. We'll see you in just a few minutes.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care at 877-374-LIVE.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Ibram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
Hi, I'm Fred Dreyer for Alpha Flex with Omega 5. When it comes to joint pain and inflammation, I'm an expert. I played 13 years in the National Football League. I've been hit and run over by the best of them. So when I have a flare-up, I don't want a painkiller. I want a solution. I've been taking Alpha Flex with Omega 5 for a long time now, and I'd be lost without it. It's powerful and natural, so don't settle for over-the-counter or prescription painkillers. Get Alpha Flex with Omega 5. It's the solution to pain and inflammation. Go to alphaflex.com right now and enter promo code DRYER. Order now and get free shipping and handling. And you can buy your first bottle at 50% off. That's 50% off, half the price. That's alphaflex.com. And don't forget to enter promo code DRYER, D-R-Y-E-R, for your 50% discount.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach. But more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Welcome back. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall along with Beth Guckenberger. We hope you're having a fabulous Saturday wherever you are out there. Yeah. It's kind of ironic, I think, for this segment that we're going to be talking to a kind of a younger guy about their band, you know, an upcoming band, and we're playing Hall & Oates as the bumper music.
Yes.
I mean, I kind of like that. You know?
I know.
When
should,
I was,
we
when,
should quiz him and say, do
when
you
I
know
was
Hall
16 or something like that, they were new.
They were. I had a convertible when I was 16, and the goal was to play the music as loud as possible for
and
everyone when I went
so
down
you were
the road.
Probably cranking Hall & Oates at some point.
I mean, or U2, or
it would be interesting
R-E-M.
If Justin knew who Hall & Oates is. Maybe we'll save that
let's
for later.
Let's not make that our open question.
Yeah, let's not be that.
Okay, well.
So Justin Mosteller is with us. He is part of the band Carrollton Band, relatively new. I know they've been at this for a little while, since about 2008 or so, but I think recently they signed kind of their first major record deal, and so we're always glad to talk to new folks,
absolutely,
doing new things, see how they got into stuff.
Absolutely. Welcome.
Welcome, Justin. We're glad to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely.
Justin, I was just thinking about, I have heard your CD. Someone passed it along to me in the last couple months, and I remember being just thrilled to listen to it. It was in my my car for a long time. So just
awesome.
Tell our listeners, for those who aren't familiar with you, what kind of music that you play and kind of how your musical journey started.
Sure. Well, that's always great to hear people sharing our music, and, mm-hmm. and that's so important to our band and our ministry. Is the power of that, and we're a Christian pop rock kind of band, and that's always sort of the toughest question when you ask somebody, hey, what do you sound like, and
mm-hmm.
You never kind of know how to classify, I guess, yourself and what you do, but yeah, Christian rock with a little bit of Southern thing in there at times, and so yeah, for me, I started. I started playing music or singing since I was a little kid. You know, my mom has cassette tapes to this day of me singing, you know, Jehovah Jireh when I was like three and stuff like that. And
one of your prouder moments.
Yes. You know, yes. Plenty of recordings that I hope no one ever gets to hear for sure. But I grew up kind of in the church and just singing. And being a part of the worship music that the church was producing and things, and had some great people that poured into me and didn't really think I'd do anything with music. And I remember I had a youth minister my freshman year of high school that said, hey, I need some help leading worship for the student ministry. And I said, okay, what's that look like? And it looked like two lame guys just standing on stage singing into microphones and swaying to the music together for the most part. But you know, he handed it over to me after my freshman year of high school and said, I think you're supposed to take our worship over. And so I began leading worship that year, freshman year, and have been doing that ever since. And was blessed by a guy who, you know, believed in me and trusted me, or was dumb enough to trust me for that.
Somehow or another, it worked out in the end.
It certainly did. So it's been awesome. And I started playing guitar. Like I said, grew up singing and things. I started playing guitar in college. So I was a late bloomer there. And I've got cousins of mine that have been playing since they were 8 and 9, and they blow me away now. But I had a late start to it and been playing guitar since then, which it's quite a few years ago now, you know, 13, 14 years ago now.
One thing that strikes me about that story is just somebody who probably, you know, was more talented than you, or certainly had more experience than you, handing it over to you, believing in what was yet to come. And I just think that's such a great example for us to, as we see people with talent and energy and a calling on their life, no matter if they're, you know, 15 years old or however old they are, breathing life into them. That sounds like that was a pivotal moment in your story.
It absolutely was, and it definitely helped shape who I am today, because I had guys like that who would trust me to step up and do things, but not just throw me out to the wolves, you know, but really disciple me and grow who I was as a person. And they saw something in there that went, man, I think you have something that we can work with. And I think that is, yeah, that's been a big part of my ministry over the years. And it was neat this past summer, that youth minister was my youth minister in Louisville, and he left that church when I was a junior in high school. And it has been years and years since I've seen him. And we've caught up with one another at conferences or something like that in different places, but it's probably been 12 to 15 years at least since I'd seen him last. And this summer our band was up in Wisconsin doing some things, and we're able to stop at his church now that he's at and lead worship at their church, and it was just great. It was a great thing to see his daughters now grown in high school and to really, you know, say to him, man, you helped me be who I am, because as a freshman in high school you said, hey, I believe in you, and I want to spend time with you and help you do this.
Now, I'd be interested to hear, you know, you and the guys in the band, obviously in the last year or so, have gone from probably a local regional band to signing a record deal. You're now doing a national radio show. What has that transition been like for you guys? How have you handled that? Have there been any, you know, cool experiences or surprises in that journey for you guys?
Absolutely. There's a whole lot of pinch me moments, you know, and, you know, we've set out about 5 years ago to really lead worship for churches. And that's really what it was at the beginning, was we weren't writing a whole lot of music. We were writing some, and but not a whole lot. And I had been traveling as a worship leader for several years, and so we just kind of were continuing in that. I had always pieced bands together, and at some point, through different friendships, the four of us came together, and it was something very special right from the start. It was special on stage and with music, but special off stage and with our hearts. And so we committed to one another about 5 years ago to say, hey, let's do this thing, whatever that means, you know, let's commit to being the band together. And we said from day one, we don't have a plan. We don't know what tomorrow holds, but we're going to look at today and what's right in front of us and walk through doors that come open and be faithful to what God's given us and try to get the most out of ourselves in that way. And then last year, you know, it's been about a year and a half ago, we released our independent album called This Is Life, and that's probably the one you heard, Beth.
Yes, it is.
And we released that, and again, that opportunity came to us just through some connections and network stuff, and that in itself was an amazing thing to us. We were able to record with a guy named Jason Horde, who's been in Third Day for many years. He's produced Shane and Shane and several other bands, and for us, even at that point, recording that album was like, man, if this is all we do, then this is great. You know, this has been a blessing to us and to get our music out. And I remember now about 16 months ago, I got a phone call from a guy who I didn't know of and didn't know who he was. And he said, hey, I'm with this record label, and we heard your album, and we loved it. Loved what we heard and loved the lyrics of what it was and the skill and things like that. And he said, you know, so we'd like to talk with you. And so in that moment, you know, I'm getting this phone call during the afternoon, and I'm going, what in the world? Really? You know, and kind of blown away. And then he called me back a couple weeks later and said, we'd like to bring you out to Washington State, and their record label owns some property out there. And so he said, we'd love to just bring you out as an independent artist and just pour into you. So our whole staff will be there, and you'll be with like 20 other artists. And he said, love to just pour into you and grow you. And he said, it's not American Idol for bands. You know, it's not a tryout, and we're not going to sign you. And he said that pretty clearly right from the start and said, this isn't an audition. This is really, we care about independent artists out there, and we want to help grow your ministry and your band. And so that experience, we went out for a week and all expenses paid, and it was like the high life to us, you
know? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Our guitarist had never been, Jeremy, he had never been west of Indianapolis, so.
quite the trip for him.
Right, so flying out to Seattle was pretty cool.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And I remember the last day of that retreat, they were brutally honest with us about the music industry, where it's going with iTunes and digital sales and all that stuff. And a lot of it is like a black cloud over your parade, you know. And I remember walking out of the last session, calling my wife and Sarah, asking, how's it going? Do you think they're going to sign you? Do you know? And I said, no, I don't at all. Yeah. And I said, I think they were honest from day one that they just want to help us, and so we walked out of there thinking, no, they're not going to sign us. And at the end, that last night, they said, hey, we want to talk to you, we'd like to partner with you and sign you to our label.
Well, great story, Jason or Justin. I'm hoping you can join us right after the break.
Sure can.
All right, we'll be right back. This is Real Life with Real Talk, back in 60 seconds.
Who's Weaving Your Story? The Story Weaver series by Beth Guckenberger highlights the plight of orphans throughout the world in personal, heart-grabbing stories of loss, struggle, and redemption. The kind of redemption only God, the great story weaver, can accomplish. Written for ages 8 and up, Tales of the Not Forgotten and Tales of the Defended Ones reveal God's ability to create a story far greater than we can imagine. And the corresponding 6-part Leader's Guides on CD help turn each book's content into a simple yet powerful 6-week curriculum for any church or small group. Use both together and you have a 12-week curriculum full of fun activities, compelling stories, biblical teaching, and practical applications. Let God weave your story and see what He can accomplish for orphans worldwide. The Story Weaver series is published by Standard Publishing and is available at www.standardpub.com or your favorite Christian bookstore.
Hey, welcome back. This is Real Life Real Talk. I am Rob Hall along with Beth Guckenberger. Good morning, Beth.
Good morning, good morning.
Saturday.
I know.
First Saturday in October.
I love it.
We say it all the time. Anytime there's a new month that comes along, like, where did time go?
We're like halfway through football season.
That's right, but it seems like just yesterday we were talking about, hey.
I've had a cup of hot chocolate already.
Well, everything is cold here from being from Monterey, Mexico. And it's like, hey, listen, it's really not that cold. Anyway.
Anyway.
Hey, we're talking with Justin Mosteller from the band Carrollton Band. And he was telling us before the break sort of, you know, how they had come to be and the opportunities and all that kind of stuff. But one thing that I have not discovered, Justin, is where in the world did you get the name Carrollton Band?
Well, it's just Carrollton. Unfortunately, Carrollton on all social media sites and websites was taken by... Frankly, you know, honestly, there's a lot of cities apparently called this name Carrollton. And so
I was wondering, Carrollton, Kentucky, Carrollton, Texas, Carrollton, I didn't know.
It goes on and on, believe me. We have heard from nearly everyone. But so we put Carrollton Band on all of our social media, CarrolltonBand.com, and Facebook is at Carrollton Band and all of those things, Twitter and all those that stuff.
Gotcha.
So, but it's just Carrollton, and... we came up with it because two of us live in Cincinnati, Ohio, and the other two guys live in Louisville, Kentucky. And Carrollton, Kentucky sits right between both cities. And we drive, since day one of our band, we drive back and forth and travel a lot. And Carrollton, the exit off I-71, became this special exit where you knew, man, I'm halfway to where I'm going, halfway home, and we would stop there and, you know, get snacks or whatever. But on a long night trip and from a day of rehearsing, Carrollton became that place of, man, I know I'm halfway home. And so that meant something to all four of us and was a way to sort of represent both of our cities and places that mean a lot to us.
Hmm. Great story.
Well, I appreciate you being on here because I think as you continue to experience what God has for you and the story He's unfolding for everyone in your band, your life is a testimony that... We have gifts, and we're to steward those gifts, and we're to offer those gifts. And when we do, God increases our footprint on this earth. And so I just, my prayer today as we have been interviewing you is that listeners would think about what it is that God put in their hand, whatever skills and talents and experiences and education, and that they would lean into those as fully and wholly as you all have done in Carrollton. And we look forward to hearing the releases that are to come.
Yeah, that's so much of our heart too, Beth. I mean, like, every stage we're on, that's exactly what we're preaching is identity and not preaching, but just sharing from our lives. Of we spend our days comparing ourselves to one another and comparing the talents we have and all that. And God has called us to be faithful with exactly who we are and what we have. And to maximize that and to be most effective with it and fruitful with it. And so we are continually, like I said earlier, just blessed by the opportunities we get. But we want to share our story with people, and we know no one else can do that. You know, there's probably 95% of our work that someone else could probably do, but the 5% is to share our story with what God's done in our lives. and do that with what He's given us in our hands. And and so we're striving to do that constantly. Yeah.
Well, we would be totally remiss if we didn't give you a chance to tell our listeners where they can find your stuff.
Yeah.
So where can they find your music?
So they can find it right now. We're in this transition period. So we signed with Centricity Music, the record label, in April, and with that came a name change with our band. So we had 4.5 years under the name Mosteller, which is obviously my last name, and we did that because I'm very arrogant and prideful, and I just wanted to name a band after myself. And we did that 4.5, 5 years ago because I had traveled with my name as a worship leader, and so to keep some of those connections. But finally in April, I was so thrilled to break away from that because it's never been my band or anything. So right now, we're 5 days away from going into the studio. We'll spend 2 weeks in October in the studio in Nashville to record the first Carrollton release. And we hope that will be out there by April 2014. And we are so excited. We've been writing for 16 months and written more songs than ever in our history for this project, and can't wait for that. But for music right now, for like our independent album, This Is Life, you'd have to search under Mosteller. That's Mosteller. And you can find that on iTunes, Amazon, on our Facebook site, which is facebook.com/Carrollton Band. Or you can go to carrolltonband.com, and it'll link you to all those places as well.
Yeah, and as Beth said, she's listening to the CD. I was listening to some of the cuts on iTunes. Mm-hmm. And I would just encourage people, go to iTunes, make those connections, listen to those demos. That's the best thing that iTunes ever did, and you'll be hooked. So great music. Figure it out, carrolltonband.com, and it'll take you to those music, and they'll get a taste for what you and the band is doing. So thanks so much for being on the show.
Absolutely, man. Really enjoyed it. Thank you all for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Justin.
Okay.
Justin Mosteller.
You know, I can't help but think about the juxtaposition between our first and second guests and this idea that although he is ambitious, you don't, like, decide you're going to go after something as elusive as a recording contract without same ambition.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
But he has, like, a humility about him that convinces you ambition is not self-serving.
Yeah.
It's about having a louder voice.
You know, we've talked about this, I think, before, certainly individually and probably on the air, this idea that anybody who thinks that they have been called to do something, something good, something great, something powerful, something whatever, they have this little bit of narcissism in them. They have to say, yes, I've been called to do something. There's this idea that, hey, I have something to offer. But the difference where that splits between personal ambition and what we just heard from Justin, this humility, is who am I doing it for? And who has given me those, an acknowledgement that I'm doing this for the Lord as something that He's given me? That's godly ambition. Mm-hmm. And you hear it in a guy like Justin. You hear it in his voice just as he's talking about, you know, where he's been and where they're going.
Yeah, I just, it resonates. You think you want him to have every one of his dreams. You want him to have the largest voice and platform he can find. Whereas sometimes ambition does give you like a little bad taste in your mouth when you see someone who seems to be self-serving or again, creating their own kingdom.
Yeah, and Dr. Kendall, when he was telling his story about Nelson Mandela, he recognized in himself that ambition to meet Nelson Mandela was more of a selfish thing than it was something that God was calling him to do. And so even though he really wanted to, he backed out from that and said, this is not a godly ambition. This is more of a selfish ambition. And so two great stories from two completely different people about how sort of God has wired them to pursue things and how they have pursued that in a godly manner.
Do you think, like, what role do you think motive plays in ambition? Do you think if, like, ambition is the byproduct of motive. So as long as your motive is pure, then, you know, shoot for the stars. Do you think that's the root of it?
Yeah, you always ask me these, like, these deep questions. Like, you know, I can see as we're looking at each other, the wheels are spinning in your head, and you're thinking, huh. And you fire away with this, you know, motive is the, what do you?
Okay, well, I guess I'll just say, instead of a question, I'll say I'm thinking to myself that motive is the X factor. If you have good motive, then who cares what you want to accomplish? Make it as big and broad and as you want it to be, as long as your motive has been checked. Ambition
I would guess off the top of my head, if you believe that what you're being called to do, the motivation, the motive for what you've been called to do is something that the Lord has put in you, then go.
Well, okay, the reason I was thinking that is because I was asking, RT, about the idea of teaching ambition to the next generation.
Right.
Like, we need to help this next generation strive and achieve and whatever, and maybe the key is in that instruction, we really emphasize the idea of motive.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm just asking. Deep thoughts, honey. Deep
those
thoughts
are, those are deep thoughts. Holy cow.
Happy Saturday morning, listeners.
But I think you are right about that. One of the knocks, supposedly, on the upcoming generation is that they lack ambition.
Yes.
And I'm not so sure that I agree with that, but as a general statement, yeah.
I mean, because perhaps. We already talked about the 2013 Google Science Fair.
That's exactly right. Those young generational people seem pretty motivated and ambitious.
Yeah, I think they had what it took. Well, yes. I think as always, it has to do with who and what we're listening to. If my ambition is because I'm listening to the Lord, then yes, I want to wake up and lean into it as hard as I can. If I'm listening to voices around me that say, as a result of what I accomplish, I then therefore have value.
I think a good conversation, perhaps with people our age and older.
25.
You're wrong. And someone like your kids or your grandkids or a niece or nephew who's younger. I'm convinced they're just as motivated and ambitious as anybody else. They just have defined success differently than the way that previous generations have defined it. They aren't into perhaps monetary reward or something showy or those kind of things. I think they're ambitious. It's just not the things that we would check the box and say, oh, that's what
ambition
success
looks
like, and you were ambitious to get that. Mm-hmm. So it would be a great conversation for somebody to have instead of just saying you're not ambitious, to say what motivates you.
Yeah.
What are you ambitious to do? What does it look like if you succeeded in that? What would that look like? Mm-hmm. Instead of saying, well, you must not be ambitious because you don't have a job that makes X number of dollars or status or something.
And even what's your hunger? What is your appetite?
Yes.
Like what? Because I think ambition, we have a hunger to what? And having that conversation about what is the appetite of the next generation? I mean, here at Real Life with Beth and Rob, we'd like to have conversations that inspire you throughout your day. This one's inspiring me.
That's right. Hey, I'd just like to remind you, if you like this show or any other show, you can go to reallifereeltalk.com or you can go to Real Life Real Talk on Facebook. Any of those places where you would normally go, and you can download any of these shows. You can get it on iTunes. You can get it wherever. So if you like this show with Dr. Kendall talking about ambition or Justin Mosteller, you can go to any of those places, Real Life with Beth and Rob, and go do those things. So next week, by the way, Sammy Johnson, who's been on before, is going to talk about the Quran and the Bible side by side. And that'll be she's always interesting.
We loved her last time.
Yep. So go with Real Life with Beth and Rob, find all those places, and we'll be back next week, same time, same place. See you then.